And it looks like it's the 5th. That's the right date. And we have a couple of measures before us. There's Senator Dyson, Stevens, Wagner, and the chair are present, so we have a quorum to do business. Let's take up House Bill 486. I better put on my glasses, which I don't have with me. We've had this bill before us in the form of a Senate bill. Who's here from the department to explain the changes?
Actually, Bob Leffer's in line.
Oh, Bob Leffer. Okay. Bob? Bob Leffer, are you there? Calling Bob Leffler. Well, I can explain the changes. Janet can explain the changes. Come on up, Janet. Get to earn the big money. We don't bite.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Janet Burleson-Baxter. I work for the Department of Natural Resources in the Commissioner's Office, and I hope that Bob Leffler is online, but if he's not, this bill, HB 486 was before this committee previously in the form of SB 339, was passed out of your committee. There was one change in the House Finance Committee, and I don't know if it's in your packet or not, but I did take the time to just outline what that was. If
page 3, line 7?
Correct.
And page in line 11?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And what, if you remember from the testimony when we were here, the department did say that we intended to draft regulations to address any questions about the financial instruments that are mentioned in the bill. All this amendment does is to say that we have to do that, and we absolutely have no problem with that. And that is the only change to the bill.
Right, and for the information of the members, this we went from a reclamation bonding to reclamation financial assurance.
What the bill does is it does three changes, actually, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Okay.
And as this committee knows, if a mining operation disturbs the land, they have to reclaim all the disturbed acres. The state laws were changed in the 1990s to accommodate predominantly a placer mining industry, and over the period in the last 10 years, we have now a large mining industry, or a lode mining industry, as described in this bill. Currently, the cap for disturbed acres for reclamation is $750 per acre, which works for the placer industry. However, it's not big enough to accommodate the reclamation for a large mine. So this bill keeps that $750 per acre cap for the placer industry. It allows a negotiated settlement for reasonable reclamation by the industry, the applicant, and the Department of Natural Resources. It expands the number of financial instruments that the department can use to reclaim that bond. Some of these are in the $26 million range, which right now we have these types of agreements for reclamation bonding on a voluntary basis, but we don't have any statutory authority to do that. It is a volunteer on their parts. And the third thing it does is provide for a trust, so to speak, that the bonding company can put money into this account, and over time the interest accrues to that account. So what DNR would anticipate that at the beginning of the reclamation bond would have a number of instruments that we would use, for example, a letter of credit from a company, or a credit or assurance of grant guarantee, whereas by the end of the mine, when we might need to actually take that money, it would be predominantly cash from the accrued interest over there, which allows us to, over the life of the mine, for example, Illinois Creek, I believe it's 30 years after the mine life for that mine to be monitored. So it just provides us an opportunity to broaden the instruments that we can use.
And did you, by the way, state your name and affiliation for the record? I don't recall.
Yes, sir.
You did, okay, thank you. Any questions of Janet? Great job. Is Bob online yet?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
You don't need to say anything. I think she covered it.
I suspect I owe her dinner.
Does anybody have any questions of Mr. Loeffler? We also have Cam Leonard here from the Department of Law to answer any questions. Any questions of Mr. Leonard? He's at the Fairbanks LIO. Okay, is there anybody else that would like to testify on the teleconference network that has not testified? Anybody in the audience? Maybe just one thing I can ask you, Janet, and maybe this question for Bob too, but you know, we've already heard the bill and the committee's already passed it out, and I think the changes are probably improve any concern about the bill, because you're making these financial tests set in regulation by the commissioner. Maybe somebody could talk about what those financial tests would probably be. That'd be an appropriate question, Mr. Loeffler.
Chairman, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay.
We run a separate program. There's just a coal industry, and that's a federal primacy of a state primacy of a federal program. And the tests tend to be things like the ratio of assets to liabilities, or sometimes they use a bond rating for a Moody's or Standard & Poor's bond rating if it's a publicly held company. But those are the tests, and what they tend to do is measure the financial net worth in excess of any liabilities, so they tell you that really the chances of a company running into trouble.
Okay. All right. Now, what about, do they take into consideration, for example, we're talking about mines here, and the price of minerals has a tendency to go up and down, and is that one of the things you anticipate being factored into the regulation?
Mr. Chairman, no, not really. And the reason is that the bonds that we keep are really to assure that the company, that we have the ability to reclaim the land should the company default. So when the price of gold went down from 400 to 250, what we really had was companies getting into some trouble, and Illinois Creek did in fact default, and we had to seize their bond. So the bond becomes more important in times of low metal prices, but in fact it's it costs the same to reclaim it no matter what the price of gold.
Okay, but instead of having them post a bond, we're going to have them provide financial assurances.
Mr. Chairman, they have an opportunity to provide financial assurance in a variety of ways. And financial assurances, if you will, is just a broader term that means bond. So they could provide a letter of credit, certificate of deposit, a corporate guarantee that meets the financial test, a surety bond, or they could actually provide cash in a trust fund. And typically, I would expect companies to use a suite of those to meet our bond requirements. So
okay.
Should they default, we could, you know, go after the surety company, the letter of credit, the certificate deposit, or use the money they'd already deposited.
So you will have something that you can get out of the company, the price of metal nosedives, and the company's insolvent in other areas, the stock's worthless, but you'll have something they can go after to clean up after them if they default.
Yes, that's certainly the intent.
Okay, well, do a good job with it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Make sure we do. We like doing things right in Alaska. Okay, I don't have any other questions. Anybody else have questions? Hearing none, does somebody want to move the bill?
I would move CS for House Bill number 486, Finance, /D, with individual recommendations attached fiscally.
Is there objection to the bill moving? Hearing none, so ordered. Let's go at ease. Next we have before Senate Bill 378, a DEC bill. Commissioner? Good afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Ernesta Ballard, Commissioner of Environmental Conservation. Thank you for giving me a chance to present Senate Bill 378 to you this afternoon. This bill will allow the department to achieve our environmental goals while continuing the streamlining of our permitting process, which I've described to you in other committee meetings. Senate Bill 378 and its companion in the House instruct DEC to seek primacy for permitting timber-related waste discharges under the NPDES program currently run by the Environmental Protection Agency. It is a partial primacy bill. As many of you know, the department is interested in full primacy. We believe this is a very good first step. This allows us to move forward with primacy for an industry sector in which the department has great expertise, and it allows the other industry sectors, which are seafood, mining, oil and gas, and municipal sewage, to see how the department's rules and regulations will work and give them a chance to help us develop an approach to full primacy, which we would hope to come back with next year. The Clean Water Act is designed to support primacy by states. Only 5 states, including Alaska, do not have primacy. 45 states do have primacy. As a result of our failure to have achieved primacy in the past, we are imposing a double permitting burden on the regulated industry in Alaska. Section 402 of the Clean Water Act is the section which requires industry to have a permit for discharge. Section 401 of the Clean Water Act requires that that permit be certified to maintain state water quality standards. We do the certification without primacy. EPA writes the permit. So the regulated community, including all the municipal dischargers under the current dual permitting scheme, need to deal with 2 agencies where one should suffice. The handout sheet in buff-colored paper that is at your desk describes this program in summary and also includes a list of expected benefits. I won't read that to you, but I want to call your attention to the 2 benefits that I personally think are the most important on this list. The first and the one that's most important to me personally is that by achieving primacy, even just for the timber industry, we are moving closer towards holding Alaskans accountable for Alaskan environmental protection. Through the missions and measures and annual budget process, the legislature and the executive have an annual opportunity where citizens can come and participate. We have that annual opportunity to discuss what our priorities are and how much money you intend us to spend on them, and we report back to you of our effectiveness. That accountability is not available to permit applicants, permit holders, and stakeholders with EPA maintaining primacy. The planning and budgeting for a federally run NPDES program do not offer an opportunity for state participation, comment, or control. The second reason that I think it's essential for us to move forward with primacy and to start with this partial primacy in the timber industry is that our permitting program, through our state water quality standards, can focus on the specific, site-specific, risk-based individual results, not on a process of permitting, but rather on specific results, and I think that's an important difference. In fact, all of the permits that are written today depend on the 401 certification, if any kind of tailoring to the site and tailoring to the specific circumstances is required. That's performed by the state through the 401 certification process. I have Dan Easton with me, as I always do when I come to your committee hearings. Today, the Division of Water Director for DEC, and we also have Terry Thurbin from the Department of Law, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Does anybody have any questions for the Commissioner? I probably do. Why only timber? Why not venture into other areas of state primacy?
Mr. Chairman, as I believe I told you early in the session, it is my personal goal to see us venture into all industry sectors. We were simply unable, in the time available to this administration before this session began, to touch base with all of the stakeholder comments that we had received. There were legitimate issues raised throughout the industries and we felt each of them needed to be addressed before we could come forward with a full primacy bill. It was agreed generally throughout industry sectors and specifically with the timber industry that because the Clean Water Act allows for partial primacy and because that is the industry sector in which DEC has the obvious superior expertise, that that was a good place to start while we worked out the other issues in the other industry sectors.
And maybe you could describe for me exactly what kind of discharges, water discharges, would be in the field and in a real way affected.
In the timber industry, yes,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman. The primary activity under primacy for the timber industry would be log transfer facilities. And the primary discharge is the bark, which falls from the management of logs into and out of the water in a log transfer facility. The primary environmental impact is the smothering of the benthic community under the accumulated wood waste, and the primary potential impact to the water column would be whatever breakdown might occur in the marine environment of that wood waste.
Okay. And currently, what is the protocol for regulating? That's an EPA?
Mr. Chairman, EPA has a general permit for log transfer facilities. There are 98 log transfer facilities covered by that general permit. That general permit has a DEC certification with it. The reason we have the expertise that I described that we have is it's been a process of many years, two or three, 4 years, of negotiation, debate, disagreement, and finally resolution between EPA and DEC as to what that permit actually requires of those permit holders. And during that time, DEC's staff professionals had the laboring oar on understanding what these impacts would be and what the best way to permit them would be.
Okay. Let's see. Does anybody else have any questions? Now, what about the, talk to me about the fiscal note.
Well, there is a fiscal note, Mr. Chairman, and the principal expense in the fiscal note is during the next 2 years. The nut of that is $300,000 in each year, which would be temporary staff, Department of Law, consultation, and support for those activities while we wrote the regulations. Not surprisingly, the regulatory and legal services effort for partial primacy supports much of full primacy in the future. There's a good deal of work that would have to be done for one industry or for 10 industries. After that, this is not a very expensive program, $132,000 of operating expense, which is primarily one staff member to be in charge of this industry. That would be in addition to our water program staff, which is about 25 staff.
And did I see program receipt authority in here, too?
Yes, you also saw a federal grant. EPA, of course, is supportive of states assuming primacy. That's what the Clean Water Act intends. There is an EPA one-time grant that we propose to split into 2 years, and then after assuming primacy, we would have the same opportunity to charge fees for those permits that we have for our other permitting program. And in fact, the Senate bill and House bill include timber industry NPDES in our fee authority. That's one of the statutory changes proposed in this bill.
And do you anticipate that the program receipts would pay for most of the program, or?
Mr. Chairman, right now, the program receipts in our other permitting programs do not pay the full cost of running any of our programs. That's always a subject of discussion between ourselves and the legislature at the time we present our budget, and I anticipate it would be again in the future.
The answer is no. Thank you. Okay, anybody else?
That was the short answer.
That was the short answer. Hearing no other questions, we have Owen Graham online with the Alaska Forestry Association. And Go ahead, Mr. Grant. You have some testimony on this bill?
Oh, yes, thank you. The Alaska Forest Association supports this partial primacy, you know, the pilot project for the timber industry for two reasons. One, it helps ensure that we have site-specific permitting decisions made that take into account the local Alaska conditions rather than some national policy of whatever the current administration is. And secondly, because it's an opportunity for us to achieve the water quality goals that the state has while streamlining the permitting process. I view this as a good thing for us in the future to have the state in the fit.
Is that all your testimony?
Yes.
Are we going to cut more trees with this? What's the advantage of, you know, the feds are doing this already and it doesn't cost us any money, and we're going to assume the responsibility, and, you know, your industry's asking the state to pick up the tab, some of the tab at least, or most of it.
Right now, I think all the LTFs that are in operation in Alaska, just under 100 of them, are permitted through the EPA's general permit, which expires next March. There was a big effort by a number of environmental groups to make that unusable by the timber industry, and we're nervous about it, the renewal of that permit. We'd rather see it renewed by the state than by the federal government, so we'd have more certainty in terms of getting the permit and what the conditions are. And in addition, for the last, I don't know if it's been quite a while since the EPA has even permitted any additional LTFs, because they haven't finalized this general permit that we're working under right now.
Okay, for the benefit of those that don't speak in acronyms, what's LPS?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's a log transfer facility.
Oh, LTS, okay. Lima Tango Sierra, okay.
Foster.
Pardon me?
Foster.
Fox, oh. LTF, okay. Thank you. All right. Does anybody have any questions, Mr. Graham? And you're with the Alaska Forestry Association. You're what, executive director? Or?
Yeah, I'm the executive director of the Alaska Forest Association.
Okay. I'm going to talk to the committee today. Thank you very much, Mr. Graham.
Thank you.
Let's see. We have John Tillinghast. Is that how you pronounce it, John?
Absolutely, perfectly. And Mr. Chairman, I'm John Tillinghast, and I'm an attorney here in Juneau, and for the past 21 years, it's been my privilege to represent the Alaska Corporation on environmental issues involved with their timber activities. That's who I'm here on behalf of, and Sea Alaska supports the legislation. I'd like to touch on one benefit of the bill in addition to those that have been pointed out by Commissioner Ballard. Commissioner Ballard pointed out that under the status quo, now we need two permits for the same discharge, one from DEC and one from EPA. And to a large extent, they look at many of the same issues. Now, aside from the inherent waste in that process, the problem is exacerbated by the fact that if somebody doesn't like the permits that eventually get issued, they can file not one lawsuit against us, but two lawsuits against us. The state permit is challenged through the state administrative hearing process. The federal permit is challenged by a direct appeal to the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. That's exactly what happened to the timber industry when the general permit was issued. Of the two processes, the state process is the better process. The state process was a trial-type hearing that took about 2 years, where folks on both sides of the issue, the timber industry, environmental groups, and DEC, put together a collection of essentially all of the expert testimony that's available in the Pacific Northwest on the issue of the possible harm that is or is not caused by the deposition of bark on the ocean bottom. The record when it was done was this high, and there were dozens of hours of depositions, live testimony by experts, and we gave the issue a thorough hashing over. At the federal level, essentially the same decision was rendered by the Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit after hearing from the parties for about 15 minutes aside in the course of hearing 8 or 9 appellate cases in the same day. They're a Court of Appeals. They're not used to resolving factual issues and technical and scientific issues. In addition to what I considered a wasteful process before the Ninth Circuit, we always run the risk of an inconsistent result, that DEC will reach one conclusion on the state permit, EPA will reach a different conclusion on the federal permit. Lastly, we're dealing with, I don't know, how do I put this, the perception that the Ninth Circuit has never been exceptionally sympathetic to Alaska and to Alaska's needs. All that goes away, but still, at least for the timber industry. The federal judiciary is taken out of the permit process entirely, and if there's a future dispute over the adequacy of our permit or any timber-related permit, it would be resolved through the adjudicatory process at the state level that I described to you earlier. Another thing it would do is, because it defederalizes the permit process, a lot of other laws that bear upon the permit decision would no longer be applicable. The National Environmental Policy Act and the possibility of having to do an environmental impact statement on a state permit would go away because there's no federal action. The Endangered Species Act, the Essential Fish Habitat Statute, which is driving all upland industries in the state to fits right now, would not be applicable because there's no federal action to consult over. The substantive concerns behind those laws would still be there because they're built into the permits themselves, but the expense of the time-consuming, in our mind, the overlapping consultation processes that we have to suffer now would go away. Why do it just for the timber industry? That sounds like a pretty good deal for everybody. I think in the long run, everybody will think it's a good deal for them. Whenever you're switching programs, you're creating uncertainty. A lot of other industries in the state aren't positive that they know how the process works with EPA. That's the known evil. There may be some of them not sure what the unknown evil is if DEC does it all. The timber industry has a fairly straightforward, simple regulatory program. It's ready to be taken over, and we're willing and happy to be the guinea pig. I think when other folks look at how it works for us, I think they'll want it done for them as well. The other reason to do it only for the timber industry is fiscal. Because the state has gone through this two-year process dealing with precisely the environmental issues that are raised by timber permitting, they've already got the expertise on board. They know more about this issue than EPA does. They're not going to go out and have to hire a bunch of timber engineers to be able to write an LTF permit because they've done their homework already. It's probably not true for an oil refinery. When the state takes on the oil industry, somebody's going to have to pay the bill for hiring some oil refinery engineers to help help DEC write a refinery permit. That's not necessary in our case. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here for any questions.
Thank you for your eloquent testimony. Appreciate it. Anybody else? Hearing none? Sure, come on up.
Hadn't signed up. I appreciate you letting me do this. I just have a couple of points.
Want to state your name?
Oh, Merle Thompson. I'm just representing myself.
Okay, thank you.
Couple questions on the streamlining part of this bill. I'm assuming that means that there's going to be less public process and less chance for public testimony if this bill is enacted. At least that's what I'm reading in there. Another point that I'd like to make is that the acre size area where these transfer log transfer sites are, there's an acre of under water that they can collect the bark, and it gets so deep or whatever. The thing is, they build these in like tidal areas where that this bark can be pushed, you know, into other areas. And I suppose from Mrs. Ballard's testimony that earlier that they would hire a diver to make sure that this stuff stays into the 1 acre area and is not from the tide collecting in other areas in a bay or something and piling up on the bottom and affecting the biology of that area also. I'm just wondering if that diver is considered already counted into the fiscal notes that are on this, which is another thing that we're where we had problem with CBM, that DEC didn't have the money basically to monitor and test for water. All of a sudden now we're willing to pay extra dollars to basically do the same thing.
I didn't hear the last sentence.
Well, now we got DEC that's willing to, while we have EPA, which is doing it on the federal dime already, now we want to transfer that over to DEC, where that money comes out of state coffers for a large part, or especially after the grant is expended in the first 2 years. So I kind of find some irony in that. That's all I need to say.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Thompson? Thank you. Well, is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? I see Matt Davison here with the environmental community. You guys don't have any comment on this? At this time, okay.
Yeah, this is Owen Graham. I've got a comment on what he had to say.
Who's this?
Owen Graham with the Alaska Forest Association again.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Graham.
Yeah, I was just going to point out that the permit holders are the ones that bear the cost of the dimes that the EPA or the state requires.
Okay.
So it's not a state cost.
All right. Is there anybody on the teleconference network that'd like to testify? Anybody else in the audience? Well, we have two options here. We can either move it out or hold it over for next time. What's the will of the committee?
You're willing to move it out? I don't know what we're going to gain by holding it one more.
Sure. Well, just make sure we have appropriate public testimony on it. If people, people see think something moving, sometimes they get motivated to show up and testify. We could leave it open until Wednesday. And
was it properly noticed?
Sure. Well, is that a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Bill number 378 with attached fiscal note out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there objection to the bill moving? Hearing none. She's out of here. We're adjourned.